Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. We have the inauguration coming up tomorrow, and we all saw the impact that social media had on Barack Obama's presidential campaign. We also saw last week how social media stole the show in reporting the plane crash into the Hudson River. But what can social media do for us? How can it help create buzz about us, whether we're trying to promote our careers, looking for a new job, wanting to make new contacts, or trying to grow our business? My first guest is an expert on social media and networking, and I'll introduce her in just one moment. Following up on this, in the second half of today's show, we've all heard how important our elevator speech is. That little blurb that we ask, or that people ask, what do you do? We come up with our little elevator speech. Well, it's a golden opportunity, and sometimes the only opportunity we have to make a good, lasting first impression. Media skills training expert Lorraine Howell is going to share how to give your elevator speech a lift. We'll also share some helpful tips about how to turn your 30-second blurb into a media or job interview. So stay with us. Let me introduce my first guest, Robin Block. She has over 25 years of traditional and online marketing experience. She has in-depth knowledge of the web and its strategic application to business. Robin has an MBA from Boston University and a BA in economics from the State University of New York. And she's been a SCORE volunteer counselor and instructor since 2003. She also speaks widely on social media and other topics of interest to small businesses. Robin Block, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vicki. I'm really happy to be here.
And we're pleased to have you. I saw you at a workshop a few weeks ago, and I've been to a couple of social media workshops. Obviously, I'm in the biz to some extent. And I was far more impressed with your presentation than anybody else's, hence having you here. And you're also local to Seattle. So just share a little bit more of your background with our listeners, if you would, and tell us how you got from working in traditional marketing, how you integrated social media into what you do now.
Well, back in the olden days, when I was at State University of New York at Albany, I actually worked on the Albany Student Press, otherwise known as the ASP. And I was in charge of putting together the classified advertising. And at that time, we were using cut and paste, wax, pasting it into a newspaper, having it printed. I mean, it was really old school. You'd walk out of there with little bits of paper stuck to your shoes. And then I started working in advertising. And let's say, scoot up, I don't know, about 15, 20 years, I went to grad school at BU. And then from there, I just got really interested in the internet when it first started. I was on BBS, bulletin board systems, in the early days. That's when you could actually watch every bit, every word come show up on your computer. It was mm-hmm. that slow. It was like 400 baud or some crazy thing. And then scoot up more years, I just got very interested in working on the net. And its application to small business is it's fantastic. It makes the small business look large. Everything from websites and now social media is the latest, greatest way to communicate online.
So I've heard you say, Robin, that 60% of adults don't know what social networking is, what social media is. Tell us what it is in a nutshell, and then we'll delve more into it and look at how it can help us in different ways.
Social media, in a simple explanation, are websites that allow for user-generated content. That could be anything from conversations, reviews, video, audio, slideshows, you name it. And then it allows for people to comment, vote. Anybody out there who's used YouTube is familiar with that. And there's some other really cool things you could do with it, too. Like you could grab a video for your website by taking the code and embedding it in your blog and so forth. So social sites have taken all kinds of forms and shapes and sizes.
And social sites like that, you don't have all the copyright issues normally that you would if you just took it from somebody else's, you know, personal website or business website.
Generally not. I'm not an attorney. However, right. If it is volunteer information that's put up on a content site, you can set privacy levels on it, but I don't believe it's copyrighted.
Yeah. But. So it's gone far from the days of the kids using MySpace. Well, they're still very actively. I was actually doing some investigative work while I was looking for this, and I was looking at my nephews and nieces' MySpace pages, and they use them very differently. So I wonder if we could take a look at some of the most common books, Facebook for one, MySpace for another, and just look at how they're being used, who's using them.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the most part, it's still a young person's domain if you look at the aggregate. But there are some, I just read a stat this morning that said 35% of adults at least have a profile on the social media websites. And a profile basically is your name, your photo, anything you want to say about yourself. And then there are sites, I mean, you need to segment the population of people who use social media sites. For example, there are people called social selectives, and they're using those sites for very specific reasons. Like if they're getting married, for example, there's a website called The Knot. And The Knot allows people to look at wedding dresses and share information about where to have an event and, I don't know, other wedding things. And if you're a small business that wants to promote to people getting married, that could be a great site for you to be on.
Right. So let's have a look at let's look at businesses, first of all, and then we'll go into job hunting and how it can help us job hunting. All right. Because I think we've had a good overall view of that. So how many businesses roughly out there? Do you even know how many businesses are using this? It seems that maybe not many. It's just kind of coming into the foray with businesses, right?
In my experience, I work with a lot of very small businesses, everything from solopreneurs all the way up to, let's say, $3 million in gross revenue. And the majority of the people that come to my classes and so forth really are fairly unfamiliar, but they're really starting to hear about it and they want to know about it. And everybody wants to know how to use it for their businesses.
And what's the most common one that businesses use? What's the most common social media?
I would say the top one that's growing, I think it doubled in size in the past since last year, is LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And LinkedIn is traditionally used for actually looking for work, connecting with professionals, white collar, in industries across the board. And LinkedIn is just, everybody knows about it now. And I think with the economy the way it is, more and more people are getting on it, and that's driving some of the growth.
Yeah, and I've heard that a lot of people in marketing, in sales, or even in service businesses use LinkedIn to pull leads from there. I'm not quite sure how that works, as I haven't done that myself. But
it's very simple, really. I mean, not to go too much into detail here, but what's happening is you can find a company that you want to connect with. You can search by industry, start with that. And then you can find companies in that industry. And then in those companies, you'll find connections that you can actually contact, look at their background. And that's how you could develop a lead list.
Okay. Let's take a break and we'll continue the conversation when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest today is Robin Block of Block Beta Marketing. Stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Next week on Conversations Live, the Art of Love expert Lucia joins Vicky to share some unique Valentine's Day ideas. And if you don't have a Valentine's Day date, we'll discuss how to get one, the ins and outs of internet dating, red flags to look for, and more. Send your relationship questions to info@conversationslive.net, and Lucia will answer them live during the show. Tune in Monday at noon to hear the Art of Love expert on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
On the AM band at 1150 and on the FM HD band at 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome to MySpace. MySpace is cool. Come look at my face. Did you go to my school? Now that you've chosen to look what's inside, my space is open. I've got nothing to hide.
We're laughing at the music here. Thank you, Eric. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my special guest in the first segment of today's show is Robin Block. She's a consultant and speaker who takes a big picture approach to small business. And we're specifically talking today about social media, how that can help us in our careers, in our businesses, and if we're looking for a job. So I wanted to talk, Robin, in this section a little bit about some of the, well, I've heard nothing but Twitter lately. Every conference I've gone to be, it's gone, I got tweeted. And I've tried to get on Twitter myself several times and been told it's too busy.
Really?
But anyway, tell us what Twitter is and why people use it. And
you're just
how
not special, Vicky.
I'm just not special, I guess.
Like the rest of us.
I don't tweet right.
What is Twitter? It is a microblogging phenomenon that everybody and their brother wants to get on right now, and sister. And what you can do is communicate what you are doing right now in 140 characters or less. And the reason why it is so brief is because they also have a mobile component. So if you want to submit a tweet, which is how you communicate on Twitter, you can do it by mobile, too. And you can also receive notifications of tweets you've received as well. So
let me ask you as a business person, what value is that to you? How does it help you in your business?
Well, so far it hasn't helped in a very specific way, but I'm experimenting with it right now, like a lot of people. And so, for example, I knew I was going to be on the air today, and I have about 72 followers now, which is pretty good. But, I mean, if you look at media like Inc.com, they have like 14,000 followers or something like that. So the media is using it, which I think is interesting. But what I used it for today was I just told people that I'm going to be on the air. Mm. So anybody who wanted to check it out could, and they could also go to the web if they weren't in this area, even in England. Or I have some followers that are from Italy and England. So if they really want to hear about this, they can go online and hear this talk right now.
And I've heard Starbucks used it to release a press release because mm-hmm. I have journalist mm-hmm. friends who are very concerned that, you know, companies may be using it not very legitimately. I'm not saying that about Starbucks, but, you know, companies could go on and say, hey, we've got this great new product or whatever, and it hasn't been vetted out, really.
That's true, but that's like any media that hasn't been vetted out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think anybody reading media needs to use their judgment about the value of the material that they're looking at. But what's great about Twitter is that it is an alert medium. In other words, it's great for announcements. It's great for letting someone know that your project is ready and they should pick up the ball. It's great for, like, I have workshops coming up. I'll let people know that those are happening. So it's a great alert mechanism, and that's why in the intro to your show you mentioned why it was great for announcing the updates and what happened with the Hudson River, things like that. So it's perfect for anything that's timely. Like, for example, if you're a real estate agent and you want to let one of your clients know that you found a great house for them, you could make sure that they're hooked up to it via mobile, and when you put out that notification, they'll get the message.
Okay.
I mean, that's just one way to use it.
Right. So, well, in that kind of situation, what's the advantage of using that versus just sending them a regular text or something?
Well, it is broadcast, so it could go to anybody who's following you.
Okay.
For example, so if you have 10 clients, you don't have to send 10 separate text messages.
Oh, okay. I get it. Mm-hmm. And I saw CNN has, is inviting tweets from viewers, too.
And the inauguration, that's an interesting point. Some of the publications out there are looking for people to tweet to a specific address and post what their experiences are down in D.C.
Oh, interesting. Well, that makes sense since Barack Obama used it so fluidly. Mm-hmm. So let's just take a very high level overview of MySpace. Is pretty much for kids, really, right?
It skews younger.
It's a younger group.
Yeah.
Facebook.
It's starting to skew older. Definitely 18 to 34, and then the 35 to 44 age group is really starting to get in on it because they see not only job opportunities, career and other career opportunities, but if you're a small business as well, it's great to make connections with your contacts, not only personally, but business-wise as well. I have a client that I counsel at SCORE, and they're starting a tennis-related website. It's new. I can't tell you exactly what it is, although, no, I better not mention it. and what they're trying to do is eventually go for funding, but if they can show the people who fund that they have a following of several thousand users, they're proving that there's interest in their business, it gives them a leg up.
Oh, interesting. With investors, yeah?
Potentially.
Yeah,
it's just one piece of the formula, you might say.
Right. So we've mentioned LinkedIn, which is the primary business one. What are the, there's Plaxo, I think, I've seen.
Well, Plaxo is kind of like online application, but social. And it's basically a shared address book. And whenever somebody updates their information on Plaxo, you can have tools on your desktop that will also update your address book of those people. So that's more of a, I call more of a social media application. But for example, there's a great site in town for people who are local, and they're also in San Francisco and some other big cities, called Biznic. And that's targeted towards solopreneurs. So if you're everything from a plumber to a dentist to a hairstylist to a marketing person, whatever, you can sign up for Biznic, get a profile. And the beauty of that is that they're not only virtual, but they're real. They organize events for people so you can actually get face-to-face.
Oh, see, we get face-to-face. I like the face-to-face contact, I have to confess.
Yeah, I mean, there's, as I always say, there's nothing that can replace a look in the eye and a handshake.
Correct. Yeah, true. What else? Any others in the business realm that if I'm a small business owner, I should be thinking of looking at?
Oh, there's so many. There's one called Zing. That's X-I-N-G. That's where you can relate to business-to-business people. BizSugar, Rise. I list many of them on my website if people want to check that out. But also, that's for the business-to-business. If you want to connect with what I call gatekeepers, people who can refer you, people connect you to potential clients. If you really are a business that wants to promote to consumers, you want to go where the consumers go. And there are lots of sites, for example, that deal with fashion. Reviews, Yelp.com is a popular social review site. So if you have a restaurant, you definitely have to be on there. If I have another client who's just opened a small workout studio, and she needs to be on there too. So when people are looking for those kinds of services, they are looking at social media for information over and above company websites now. That's a new stat I just saw.
Interesting. Now, let's say I'm hooked up with some form of social media, whatever, you know, my preferences, whatever my business service is applicable for. What about blogging?
Blogging is great if you know how to write and you have the time and you have the kind of business that it's appropriate for. Like you give a service and you need to demonstrate how smart you are, a blog is a great thing to have. However, a lot of my clients aren't really writers and they don't really have the time to keep their own blog. So what I recommend is that they go to blogs that are related to their business, that are reaching the audience they want to, and comment on other people's blogs. Those blogs already have a lot of traffic. If you can get a connection from there back to your website, you're golden.
Oh, so the advantage is there, they'll have a link to their website and somebody reading that site will pop back to them. I used to have a blog. It was a personal blog, but I found it very time consuming. And it's not just the writing of the blog that was easy for me, but it was the social interaction that followed. Having to reply to comments and stuff like that can take a long time.
But that is the beauty of the blog, is that you want to encourage that interaction because that gives you that opportunity to make that real connection with someone.
Right.
Oh, and just one bit of advice. If you blog somewhere else, don't just say, oh, I thought that was a great article. What you want to do is demonstrate your expertise in critiquing the article. And then people will say, oh, that was an interesting comment. I want to go back to your site and see what else you have to say.
Yeah, so add some value there.
Yes, exactly.
So let's, while we're talking about value, let's look at some of the value then that this kind of media offers to business owners, because especially if you're a solopreneur, that time is a huge, huge cost to you.
Yeah.
So how do you work with people? What kind of advice do you give people when they're talking about this to you?
When you're using social media, you have to think about it like any other promotional tool that you use. If you except in this case, you're not really counting the budget or cost. Your time is your cost. But when you're small, time is money. I mean, that's true in any case,
Most definitely, but especially.
So the idea is that you really want to be very selective about where you target, what you use, and how much time you spend on it. The first thing in that process is identify your goals. What do you want to accomplish? Do you want to get referrals? Do you just want to do research? Do you want to build brand awareness? And sometimes there are tools in the marketing promotional mix arsenal that work a lot better than social media and take less time. And one example I like to use is you could take 20 hours to write a press release, get it put out there, post it online, call a couple of editors, and get noticed that way versus trying to build awareness using social media. It looks like it doesn't cost anything, but the time is more valuable. It could take you many more hours than 20 hours to get the same kick.
Okay. And what about what we say? You know, we've all heard of careers and businesses that have been made or broken because of social media. In fact, I was watching a segment the other evening, and a woman who'd been in business for 12 years was literally, she really was forced to change her company name because another company with the same kind of name had made some very, I don't exactly know what kind of comments, but they were inappropriate and it was affecting her business. So what kind of things should we talk about, should we not talk about?
Well, don't post, as I read somewhere online, don't say anything you wouldn't want your mom to read or you wouldn't want the general public to know. I mean, I think that's just common sense. If you're really trying to promote your business, always think every word you put out there will live in cyberspace forever. And you want to make sure that you're always saying positive comments about whatever you are and whatever you're doing. Like, be careful what you say.
Yeah.
And also to add to that, you always want to track your reputation. And there, I list a bunch of sites on my website about where you can go to track your reputation, who's talking about you. Twitter has alerts where you can get notices of when people are tweeting about you. So just be on the ball, pay attention to what people are saying out there. And then you should have a little bit of a crisis plan in place, just like crisis PR. If somebody says something bad about you, you need to have a few steps you're going to take to mitigate the issue. For example, on Yelp, if somebody writes a negative review, what you want to do is make sure you know what it is, write to the person offline and say, gee, what was your problem? Try to resolve it, whatever. And then if it works out for them and they're happy, encourage them to retweet, rewrite, and turn that thing around.
What's your view on people reusing your content? Let's say you've blogged on something and somebody else turns around and reuses that and puts their name on it.
Well, no, that's unacceptable. No, you can't do that. If it's usually you have to put the byline, there's usually some restriction on like my whole site is copyrighted. So if you want to use my material, you have to credit me or link back to me. You can't.
Because that's a major concern of many people. I've seen some of my articles plopped right in the middle. You know, somebody else has written a headline and they've written a byline at the bottom. And I'm like, no, I clearly remember writing that. And I have the, you know, the hard copy to show it.
I mean, what I would do immediately is just write to them and say, you can't do that. And if legal action is necessary, that's a whole nother story. I mean, anybody can steal anything on the web.
Yeah.
People have been doing that for years, but it's good to be vigilant.
Yeah, and usually if you get in touch with their host server will look into it and put some pressure on them, because that's the way I approached it. Mm-hmm. I put a cease and desist up, and then
there you go.
Yeah. So let's talk about how we can use this for job hunting. If we're out there job hunting, what are some specifics that we need to keep in mind? Do recruiters even use social media?
That's a very interesting question. And I just was trying to do a little research on that. And the corporate recruiters are just getting on board. They're learning about it. They're hearing about it. I mean, they've used other methods for years. So this is another thing to add to the layer. Mm. But what I did read is that recruiters aren't necessarily looking for skill so much as personality. So I think when they get closer to narrowing the field of who they want to go for, they're going to look online and see if they can see what's going on with that person, because the cultural fit in a company is very important.
Yeah. And so specifically, if I'm looking for a job, what kind of sites probably would work best for me?
Well, first of all, if you're in an industry that isn't using the web, isn't using social media, it's probably not going to work for you. So there might be some industries where it doesn't apply. But if you believe you're in an industry, and you should know if you're in that industry,
right,
if people
right.
are using the internet and using social media, the first thing you want to do is find the sites where people are that could hire you or in the same industry. But the very first one, and you want to be on LinkedIn. I mean, that's without doubt. And you want to make sure you post a resume. You want to make sure you get people to recommend you and write comments about you. It's a great way to track where your colleagues are going if you were just let go, because their addresses will change and you want to stay in touch with them. But what I would say is don't try to go to a contact and say, hey, do you have a job for me? That's not really the way it works. The idea is, just like in the offline world, you want to make sure that you create a relationship with someone first. So when that job does come along, you could contact them and say, hey, I heard about this job. Can you back me up? Can you connect me? So forth. So that's really the best way to make use of that. And then, for example, in a local way, a great way to find jobs, besides finding jobs on LinkedIn, is I'm on a few message boards, for example, like Seattle Tech Startups or Digital Eve, and they target people like tech geeks and things like that. Sorry, yeah. People out there who are on those lists, but it is a bit techie lists to some degree. And they post jobs all the time. And the beauty of that is that you're going to find jobs there if you're smart enough to find them that other people aren't going to find. So you're kind of beating out the competition a little bit.
Excellent. Great advice. This half hour has whizzed by. I want you to give out your website. And I also know you have a booklet or a guide coming out on social media soon. So let's just sign off with that.
Oh, okay. First of all, about my social media guide for small business, you can go to my website at blockbeta.com. That's BLOCKBETA.com. And on the homepage, there's a big button there that you can press and get on the wait list. It's coming out next month. Fingers crossed. And also, I give a lot of free advice, lots of links and so forth. And I also have a calendar about some upcoming speaking engagements on my site as well.
Yeah. So again, that's Block Beta Marketing. Say you say it. I'll get it wrong.
Just Block Beta, one word. .com, blockbeta.com.
Blockbeta.com. Yeah, and I'll echo that. Robin is spelled with two B's, Robin. She has some excellent articles on there. And if you're new to this or whether you want to learn more, it's a great place to start. Robin, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicky.
And we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by media skills training expert Lorraine Howell. We're going to talk about how to give that elevator speech of yours a boost. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Welcome to Book Talk, brought to you in part by Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Baxter, and today I want to talk about Toni Morrison's latest novel, A Mercy, which just came out late 2008. At first, A Mercy seems to pick up the same tempo as her Pulitzer-winning novel, Beloved. There are the familiar topics such as identity of self and within a culture, mother-daughter relationships, slavery, and its psychological impacts on all involved. However, quickly you realize that A Mercy sings its own song. It is a beautiful, poetic approach and very lyrical yet haunting story that reveals what lies beneath slavery. It is the late 17th century. The infant colonies of the future nation experience extensive and powerful divisions in class, while religious oppression provides fertile soil in which slavery and racism quickly takes root. Rebecca, virtually a mail-order bride from England, willingly crosses the Atlantic to be the wife of a man she's never met to escape the horrors of religious intolerance in Europe. Anywhere but here, she thinks, but soon endures loneliness and heartbreak as she loses one infant after another while her traveling husband, Jacob, makes his trading rounds from New York to Maryland and Virginia. Jacob Vark is an Anglo-Dutch trader, and despite his distaste for dealing in flesh, he takes a small slave girl in part payment for a bad debt from a plantation owner. The child's name is Florence, and she's a small 8-year-old with roughened hands and delicate feet. Jacob hopes that Florence will comfort Rebecca as a replacement, if you will, for the daughter that had just recently died. Florence joins two others already on the farm. Lena, an older servant who survived the devastation of her Native American tribe, and Sorrow, a young feral child who was raised and abandoned on a wrecked slave ship. The story centered on Florence. It's her voice you first hear, and it's full of yearning. Her mother pushed her to Jacob to accept as payment for her master's debt, and this young child is suddenly thrust into unfamiliar and frightening surroundings. For Jacob, he hopes that this motherless child will take the loneliness away from the childless mother back at home, but an unforeseen tragedy forever changes the dynamics of the Vark farm. While A Mercy is on the surface a story of slavery, deep down, it is really about a mother who cast off her daughter in order to save her, and of a daughter who continually relives that act of mercy. Such a small book that packs a big wallop. I thoroughly enjoyed this book. I love the different voices and appreciated especially Florence, who spoke almost in a dream state, like someone who just never fully got the chance to grow up. Even though the crux of the story occurs when she's 16, she's still childlike and seeks love and acceptance from anyone who glances her way. I also felt very engaged with Lena, the ever-suffering elder servant who struggles with her own identity and heritage against her survival and future. Sorrow, well, she's the least understood but definitely has a last laugh and gives quite an impression. I think I liked her the most out of the group, completely wild and uncontrollable. Maybe she had more together than what they gave her credit for. So pick up Toni Morrison's latest masterpiece and marvel at her ability to give a voice to the things that were left unsaid. Enjoy the book.
Thanks for listening to Book Talk. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at noon on KKNW AM 1150. See our guest schedule at conversationslive.net. And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in the second segment is Lorraine Howell. She spent 12 years as a television news and talk show producer in San Francisco before founding Media Skills Training in 1998. She's based right here in Seattle and coaches major executives and professionals on how to be more effective when speaking to the media or making presentations. And she's also written a great book. It's called Give Your Elevator Speech a Lift. Short book, but this is the best material I've read on giving your elevator speech a lift. Lorraine Howell, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here, and thank you for that great promo.
Well, I'm being serious because, you know, we all say, oh, one of my friends, I bought her a book for Christmas. She's like, another book I have to read. But I read this, I think I read 8 pages on my way back from a business trip to Portland when I stopped for lunch. And then the rest of it, I finished off this weekend in the bubble bath. So it's about 40 pages long and told me everything I need to know about improving my elevator speech. So I want to start off by asking you how you went from television news producing, talk show producing, to creating your own media skills training company.
When I left the TV business, it was coincidental with moving back to Seattle from the Bay Area. And I knew by that time that I was done with the intense pressure that's generally involved in being in the media. At that time, I had been working in television news, and I knew I needed a break. And so I started looking around for what would I do instead. And all of my background was in live interview format. And so I knew a lot about getting to the meat of the matter. And so I started teaching people how to do media interviews because I knew a lot about that. And eventually that led to the whole area of public speaking coaching. And then people started asking for my help on networking skills. And that's where the elevator speech work came in.
What's the most common mistake you think you, when you go to network groups, social functions, what do you think is the most common mistake that you see people make when somebody goes, what do you do?
Well, I think it's misinterpreting the point of that question. When people ask you, what do you do? What they're really asking is, what can you do for me? So that's the first little mistake. The bigger mistake is launching into a whole dissertation about how you do what you do. So you start talking about the process instead of the benefits or the results or the value that you bring.
You have a great quote in the book that says, if I ask you the time, don't tell me how the watch works.
That's exactly right. I got that from a client, and I use it liberally because most people launch into how the watch works.
Mm. So tell us what your elevator speech is, if you would.
I'd ask that a lot. I'm working on my elevator speech a lot. It's not, I don't have just one canned spiel. The most recent version is I'm a recovering television producer. And I get people ready for the spotlight.
There you go. That's good. I know that. I like that.
So that captures people's imaginations on a couple of levels. First of all, the recovering television producer is something they don't expect. But getting people ready for the spotlight is something that people can immediately understand.
Right. And so how, what, sorry, what I wanted to ask was many people have the same as you probably, they don't just have one audience, they don't just wear one hat, and yet we just use one elevator speech. So you say in the book we really should have one for each particular audience. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that, and then we'll look at how we can start developing one.
Well, I think it's important because when you read the book at the end of chapter one, there's a questionnaire that I use. And the very first question is, who's your audience? And understanding who it is you're trying to connect with and who it is you're trying to persuade is the place where you always start. And you do, most of the time, you do have more than one audience. And generally, that's depending on, first of all, what you're marketing at that particular time, what's needed in the marketplace. In other words, markets change. I'm not selling or I'm not delivering the same services that I was 10 years ago when I started my business. So it's keeping fresh with your audience, but it's also keeping fresh with you, with so that you're engaged when you talk about what you do.
And they call it elevator speech because why?
Well, elevator speech, the whole term came from Congress, believe it or not. It is said that if you needed to persuade a congressperson, a senator, or someone in Congress, you needed to be able to do it in the space of an elevator ride. So it really refers to the amount of time you have to convey a particular point or persuade somebody or get their interest. It's not about getting in the elevator, because as you know, most of us don't, unless we're with somebody we know real well, we don't talk in elevators. Yeah. We just kind of turn around and face the door and look up.
Very true. Very true. Golden opportunities wasted sometimes, I think. So do you recommend a 30-second, 60-second? I mean, I've heard all kinds of different timelines on that. What do you typically recommend to people?
Well, it's, again, going back to the idea that it's not a canned or there's no one formula. But the truth is you only have about 10 to 15 seconds to capture somebody's imagination. So there's a lot of pushback these days about the concept of an elevator speech because they feel it's too rigid or it doesn't really convey what you want to convey in a conversation. My approach to it is whatever you can say in those initial moments to capture that other person's attention. So think of it less as a formula to what can I say that's going to have that person say back to me, ooh, tell me some more about that. That's the goal of a great elevator speech.
Okay.
It's not a data dump, in other words. It's not tell them everything about everything. It's just kind of that hook or that tease to get people to stay in conversation with you.
Yeah, it makes sense, Lorraine. I think many people have, you know, myself included, have had elevator speeches that are too broad because we don't want to miss a potential client. So we kind of make it very general, very broad, so that it kind of touches on a lot of people. You say that's actually counterproductive. So I wonder if you talk to us about why it's counterproductive.
It's counterproductive because what you want to be able to do is give people an idea of where you are in the scheme of things, because that person may not be your target market or target customer, but they may know somebody who is. So they need to be able to recognize what you do because they become part of your network. So every time you have a conversation with someone, it's a potential opportunity. Now, I say that, but there's also a warning sign there. Don't use every conversation as a sales point, because that gets really irritating and people really get a little bit, you know, upset when you're on the make, you know, when you're always trying to sell.
Yeah, understandable. I was going to ask you that. Is it appropriate to use these at, you know, when I go to what I call social functions, you know, just a friend's dinner party or something, is it appropriate or inappropriate to use it there? It depends, I guess, on the company, right?
Well, I think it depends on the company. It does. It's the company. But also when you think about it, the question, what do you do, is probably the most often asked question no matter where you are, whether you're at the PTA or whether you're at a cocktail party or if you're in a business networking situation. So having a variety of different ways to answer that question is always a good thing to do, but you don't want to sound salesy. A good elevator speech is not salesy. It's a way to say, I mean, I could say that I'm a recovering television producer and I help people get ready for the spotlight. I can say that just about anywhere and people understand what I'm doing.
That's true. And as you said, it teases the imagination. I want to know more. Why are you a recovering producer and how do you help them? So let us take a break. And when we come back, I'd like to go into some of the steps that we can start looking at to create our elevator speech. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest today in the second segment is Lorraine Howell. She's the founder of Media Skill Training and the author of Give Your Elevator Speech a Lift. Stay with us.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at pause.org or call 425-787-2500.
Looking for new fiction authors? For a different kind of book? For good writing that challenges the mind, the heart, the spirit? Then check out Book Talk Podcasting at 1150kknw.com. Book Talk brings you weekly bite-sized book reviews brought to you by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. You can listen to Book Talk Podcasts at 1150kknw.com or anytime by downloading them to your MP3 player. If you'd like to try your hand at submitting a review, email info@conversationslive.net for more information. To listen to Book Talk, go to 1150kknw.com and click on podcasting. It's that simple. Have you ever wanted to make a movie or short film but don't know where to start? Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair on February 2nd for tips, tools, and resources from a Sundance Film Festival participant. We'll share what it takes to be a successful filmmaker, where to begin, how to see your project through to the end, and how to get your film noticed. Join us Monday, February 2nd at noon, right here on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest is Lorraine Howell. We're talking today about giving your elevator lift giving your elevator speech a lift. Got it back to front there. Lorraine wrote this book, and she's the founder of Media Skills Training, and she's talking to us today about how to get our media presentation skills, how to improve our elevator speech, how to get all that in order. So, Lorraine, let's kick off with how we begin. How do I begin if I don't have an elevator speech? Where do I begin?
Well, there's a set of 10 questions that I suggest you start with. And I already mentioned the very first question, which is, who's your audience or who's your target customer? Who is it that you're trying to persuade? And when I ask that, it's more than just the demographics of that group. You want to look at the characteristics. You want to look at what binds those people together. For example, one of my clients is an attorney. And when I asked her that question, she talked about the fact that they were businesses of a certain size, like $25 to $30 million. But really, when you step back and look at it closer, it turns out those customers that she wanted to work with were actually vendors to large multinational corporations. So it was very specific. And then we started looking at going into the next question is, what do they care about? So what's important to those people?
Okay. And I love this because, as you know, when I used to work in sales, we were always told, imagine everybody with WIFM on their head. What's in it for me? And that's one of the points you make here. It's very important to figure out what's important to your customer, to your audience, and it's never what you think it is.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you my own experience with that. When I started doing my business, I talked about media training. Well, back in those days, and even today, not everybody is exactly sure what media training is. And I thought also that people were buying my experience, or they were buying me and my knowledge. Well, it's not. They're not buying that. What they're buying is my approach. They're buying my ability to make it safe and fun and work with people in a way so they can overcome their basic fears about public speaking. So I had to readjust how I talked about what I did.
Mm. And you said at the beginning that you're always refining your elevator speech. And when you wrote the book, it was at that point, I teach leaders to speak with confidence and impact.
That's exactly right.
So how often should we go back and revisit our elevator speech?
Well, I recommend yearly, but I think even shorter times than that, I think it depends on how your audience reacts. So if you're not getting the results or the kind of questions back when you're using your elevator speech, then you know it's time to refresh it. Right now, I'm looking again because the economy has shifted dramatically. And so I'm talking more about, I teach people how to stand out in a very competitive environment, or I teach people how to communicate their value in the workplace. For job seekers, I mean, the elevator speech is a perfect foundation for people who are out there now looking for new work and new jobs.
Yeah, definitely. It's critical, I think. And you say in the third chapter, chapter three, you say use examples, analogies, or metaphors to create verbal pictures for your listeners, like the body detective, for example. Tell us what you mean by that.
That's one of my favorite stories. I have a client. Her name is Whimsy Charrington. She's an amazing massage therapist. But when you think of massage therapist, you think of the table and the relaxing massage. That's not what she does. And it turns out she was spending most of her time explaining what she doesn't do. And so I talked to her, and we went through this process. And there's one of the questions on the questionnaire is, what spins your jets? What do you love about what you do? And when I asked Whimsy that, she was going through and explaining how she loves to go through. She works with people in chronic pain, so it's not a relaxation massage. So she started describing to me what it was like going in, figuring out where the exact point of pain was, and how she resets those muscles. And as she was talking about it, it was almost this adventure in finding out where the pain is. And I said to her, I said, you're like a body detective. And when we said that, we both went, ooh, that's good. Because it captures the imagination. It says a couple of words that people can understand a little bit, but they don't know quite what it means. So it almost begs the question, what is that?
Yeah, it so differentiates her from other massage, you know, just being a massage therapist.
Yes.
How do you go about pulling information from somebody when they don't know what differentiates them? What kind of things should they be looking at to help themselves differentiate
from
others?
Part of it is my ability to draw it out of them and ask the right questions, and it's usually based on the conversation we have in the moment. But another thing I suggest is that you go out there and talk to people who are already doing business with you, or people who know you and can see, give you a more objective viewpoint than how you see yourself. And so if you haven't done that in a while and you're in business, I suggest that you go and talk to your existing clients and existing customers and ask them, not do you like me or not? It's really, what do you find of value, or what causes you to continue doing business with you? What's most important about what we offer that you continue to value? Those are the things. So ask your existing customer base.
Okay, good. And you say, what do you want people to remember about you? What kind of things spring to mind for you with that?
Well, I think when you're talking to somebody, you want to leave them with an impression. And it's related to, what do you want your reputation to be? Or what do you want people to be thinking about after they've done talking to you? For example, at the end of this interview, I hope people are looking at how they communicate a little bit differently. I think I want them to be asking different questions. So those are the kinds of things I hope in my presentation, that I'm leaving them with those kinds of ideas, and maybe that they want to check me out a little bit more and see what else I'm talking about and offering.
Right. Now, how long, 2-3 sentences?
I think it depends on what you're doing. I think 2 sentences max, just, again, it's just to get the conversation going, not to give them a complete scenario or complete bio of everything you do, but it's just a conversation starter. And hopefully it's something that has them kind of get out of the noise. If you think about it, we're so inundated with information out there that we don't pay attention unless there's something interesting or interest to us.
Yeah. I know when I go to social functions, you know, often people will come up and say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I do this, and I do that, and I do the other, whether you're interested in their product or service or not. And we kind of touched on the importance of, you know, dumping that kind of thing there. But my question just flew right out my head, and it was a good one. Hold on, it'll come back.
Well, if you don't mind, just in,
go ahead.
In relation to what you just said, we are all now channel surfing in our brains. if you think about it, when the remote control was invented years ago for television, we started surfing television, and we didn't stop until we saw something that was interesting to us. When the web came along, we now surf the web, meaning we're clicking around, looking for something that we're interested in. It's the same thing now in conversation. We've been conditioned to channel surf in conversation. So a good elevator speech keeps your audience from changing channels. That's the goal.
Yeah. Now, what if I want to, once I've got my elevator speech, what if I want to develop this and start reaching out? Let's say I want to grow my business by getting in touch with media outlets and, getting interviews and or making speeches at functions. How do I take that and turn it into a bigger presentation?
Well, I think what you use is what your value is and what differentiates you, and then you form that into a pitch. My bailiwick is not publicity, but I know enough about it, having been on the other side for 12 years, that especially when you're pitching to media, you really need to be able to capture what the media is covering at the moment. You need to make it relevant to a particular audience, and you need to make it new and kind of sexy. I hate to use that term, but that's really it. You really need to make it some, because media, I remember when people used to call me with ideas, generally speaking, the media feels like, well, been there, done that. I've seen that before. What's new about that?
Right.
Or what's your new angle?
Right.
So it needs to be new. It needs to be a different spin on a particular issue. Now, for speaking, that's another thing. And there are a couple of things. First of all, there's some great information out there. Nancy Jutton has a wonderful toolkit for do-it-yourself publicity. So there's lots of tools out there. And then also for speaking, you can become a member of the National Speakers Association, which is a great way to learn about how to pitch yourself and how to get more speaking business.
Yeah. And Toastmasters works really well, I think, for many people to develop confidence, doesn't it?
It really does. I recommend that a lot to clients.
Okay, my question that flew out my head there. Many times we hear an elevator speech and it sounds like a canned presentation. You talk about the importance of putting passion in there, and you talked a little earlier about spinning your jets. You know, what spins your jets? Find that passion. I wonder if you'd share a little bit more about that, because we want something that rolls off our own tongue and sounds natural and part of who we are.
That's exactly right. And And that's why the question, what spins your jets, is in that questionnaire. Because unless you understand what excites you, and it's your excitement and your passion that will connect with another person. People are so attracted to another person's enthusiasm that they will, even though they may not understand exactly what you're talking about, they'll want to hear more. And I don't mean in a fake way, get out the pom-poms and do the cheerleading. But genuinely, I mean, when I start talking about what I do, you can tell I'm passionate about it. And it's not overbearing. At least I hope it's not overbearing. But I love what I do.
I can tell that, and I can feel the passion, and I'm sure our listeners can too. And that's a good note to end this segment on. It's flown by, and I thank you for being with us, Lorraine. I want you to give out your website information, please, so people can learn more about you.
Thank you. It's mediaskillstraining.com, mediaskillstraining.com, and the book's available at Amazon.com. It's also available on my website, and I have it in an ebook. So you can also, there's a variety of different ways to get it.
Mm-hmm. And the book is called Give Your Elevator Speech a Lift by Lorraine Howell, How to Craft Your Own 30-Second Commercial. And if you're in business or looking for a job or looking to promote yourself in your career and say, I don't have time to read, I'm going to say you don't have time not to read this book. So I want to thank everyone for being with us today. And if you can find out more about our guests and more or touch base with me at conversationslive.net. And we also have a new voicemail box that I want to give out to our listeners. This is just for you. You can share feedback on today's show or raise any questions or make suggestions for future shows. You can leave a voicemail at 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159. And I thank you for being with us today. We'll be back next week with The Art of Love. Until then, live well, live strong, and thanks for being with us this hour on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Now,
Next week on Conversations Live, the Art of Love expert Lucia joins Vicky to share some unique Valentine's Day ideas. And if you don't have a Valentine's Day date, we'll discuss how to get one, the ins and outs of internet dating, red flags to look for, and more. Send your relationship questions to info@conversationslive.net, and Lucia will answer them live during the show. Tune in Monday at noon to hear the Art of Love expert on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.